Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This year, there have been 113 incidents of gunfire on school grounds, resulting in 41 deaths and 82 injuries, according to Everytown for Gun Safety. Gun violence is now the leading cause of death among young people in the United States, according to the University of Michigan. Despite making up 14% of the U.S. population, Black people accounted for half of the nation's homicide victims. On today's Your Call, we will speak with community organizers working on prevention in two cities, Oakland and Philadelphia. Last Tuesday in Philadelphia, five gunmen ambushed a junior varsity football scrimmage as it was ending. Police say 64 bullets were fired. Nicholas Elizade, a 14-year-old student, was killed. Four were injured. No arrests have been made. In this report from CBS Philadelphia, you will hear from the brother of 14-year-old Nicholas Elizade and parent Tanya Kosar.
I mean, my little brother's 14, and just hearing him get shot is the worst feeling in the world. I mean, everybody always preaching that cops need to be at every school, but yet nothing happens. This ain't the first school shooting. It's been Texas, other states, now Philadelphia. This just needs to end, honestly.
I want to say that I was sad to hear the news, but it's something that's happening all around the city. It's getting out of control. So it wasn't uncommon to get a phone call like that. Just wasn't something that you wanted to hear. So I just want to get Freddie home so that, you know, I just want to get my grandson home.
Thanks to CBS Philadelphia for that clip. Another shooting in Philadelphia happened yesterday, prompting five schools to go into lockdown. According to Fox 29, a 21-year-old was pronounced dead, and a man in his 20s is in critical condition. On Wednesday afternoon in Oakland, investigators say at least two shooters fired over 30 rounds in the King Estates campus, where Rudsdale High School is located. The shooters entered the front door and then started shooting. They used handguns with extended magazines. They shot six people, two students, a security guard, a counselor, and two school employees. Two victims are in critical condition. Police say the shooters came to the campus to target a specific person. The six victims were not the intended targets, and the suspects are at large. On Saturday night in Oakland, two brothers were shot and killed at a house party. According to reports, a shooter entered the home and opened fire. Four people were shot. 17-year-old Jazzy Sotelo Garcia and his brother, 15-year-old Angel, were tragically killed. They were students at Berkeley High. Two other teens were wounded. And last night, Oakland had its 100th homicide victim of the year. 60-year-old Louis Truhill was a father and grandfather who was battling cancer, according to KTVU. He was the father of a community organizer, and the shooter is still at large. Joining us to talk about the work they are doing to prevent gun violence and to build their communities and to heal are three guests. James Fitzpatrick is a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive, an Oakland-based organization founded in 1991 to break the cycle of violence and uplift a thriving community of leaders. Teens on Target is a six-session violence prevention curriculum presented in the form of workshops to middle school students across Oakland neighborhoods most affected by violence. The curriculum was written by people affected by violence. Hi, James. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
We're also joined by Janisha Grisham, also a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive. Hi, Janisha. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you. James and Janisha were youth leaders in the TNT program while they attended high school and are both recent hires at Youth Alive as violence prevention educators. We're also joined today by Dr. Dorothy Johnson-Spite, a licensed family therapist and the founder and national executive director of Mothers in Charge, a grassroots organization whose mission is violence prevention through education. Dr. Spite started this organization in Philadelphia. They provide grief support to families affected by violence and work with school districts, community organizations, and government agencies. In December 2001, Dr. Johnson-Spite Fight's son, Khalik Jabbar Johnson, was tragically shot 7 times over a parking space. He died at age 24. She started Mothers in Charge a few years after Khalik's murder. There are now affiliates in several cities. Members and staff are featured in a short documentary called Heaven, Can You Hear Me? Hi, Dr. Johnson Spite. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're just so sorry about the loss of your son.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you all to have dialogue on this very serious issue. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Johnson Spite. And I just want to start off with you because you started Mothers in Charge 20 years ago. You grew up in Philadelphia. You know, instead of me framing this conversation, given all of the experience that you have, you sit with moms on a regular basis and feel their pain. How do you think we should be talking about this issue?
I think there needs to be serious conversations on a regular basis. And it needs to be, you know, people who are involved and people who are impacted. You know, I think we need to have conversations on a regular basis, of course, of our community leaders. But we also need to have conversations with young people. They are oftentimes the ones who are most impacted by this. And they're the ones who are oftentimes traumatized by maybe their own losses and unresolved grief and all kinds of traumatic experiences that leave them oftentimes hurting. And one thing we know for sure, hurt people hurt. So it needs to be a conversation we have on a regular basis. And I thank you for the opportunity for us to be here this afternoon or this morning for you. But I think we need to have the community involved. The community needs to be involved on a regular, consistent basis, volunteering and asking themselves, you know, what can I do? What can I do to make a difference? And there are many different things that folks can do. And I think people are at the point now where they want to get involved, but may not know what to do. So maybe this conversation today will, you know, help some folks understand and the importance of their involvement and how they may be able to get involved.
Well, to your point about listening to people, that's what Youth Alive says, that we really need to listen to the youth. So, Janisha, what are your thoughts about how we need to be talking about these issues?
I believe that these conversations need to be more youth-driven. I feel like, you know, they're just not listened to enough. So that's one of the solutions. Just listening to them, getting their opinion, you know, they're the ones living in it, living through it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I noticed that watching a number of local TV clips about Philadelphia and Oakland, a few young people were quoted in the Philadelphia clips. I was only able to find a 10-year-old. I mean, that's just horrific that a 10-year-old has to talk about gun violence, but that's where we are in this country. Not many young people at all in these local TV clips around the Oakland shootings. James, as a young person, what are your thoughts about how these conversations need to happen? What should where should the focus be?
I'm going to have to agree with what Janisha said. The conversations need to be held with the youth, which is what we do in our program. You know, we go to these high schools and we talk to the youth about the violence that goes on in the community. We hold workshops at middle schools and talk to the middle schoolers about the violence that goes on in their community. Because like we mentioned plenty of times before, they're the ones who's living through it. They see it every day. They hear it every day. They know what it is, but they don't have the opportunities to talk about these issues that's going on around them. You know, they cover it up or hide it, you know, because they're not able to talk about it in school. They don't talk about it with their parents. They may talk about it with their friends, but do they take it seriously? No. So, yeah, these conversations are for the kids because they're the ones who's really living through it.
We'll talk more about this throughout the show, James, but what really strikes you about what you hear from young people in Oakland, especially those that are directly affected by gun violence and violence in general?
What strikes me is their experience, because you wouldn't think like sixth graders would be experiencing the things that they experience. Over my time of being in Teens on Target, not just as a violence prevention educator, but as part of Teens on Target as a student, I've heard a lot of stories from these kids, a lot of stories from my peers, and it's stories that you wouldn't think anyone under the age of at least 21 would be dealing with. These kids go through a lot, and they see a lot, and they hear a lot, and they know more than they give off. And I'm glad that we're giving them the space to be able to share that, because for the kids who don't, it normally leads them down a path of negativity.
Can you give us a few examples of stories you've heard about what these young people are dealing with?
Our whole thing is about confidentiality. Okay. So I don't want to really get into details about the stories, but, you know, some general ones are gun violence, a family member of them being shot in front of them. Maybe their parents are abusive. Maybe their parents aren't always there and they're hopping from house to house. Just a lot of crazy stories you wouldn't expect a child to be experiencing.
Dr. Johnson Spite, I'm sure you can relate to this because through your work with Mothers in Charge, in many interviews, you've said that you began to realize how angry teens and young adults who are unable to cope with their own anger and pain resort to violence within their communities. You've worked with juvenile offenders, some of whom are incarcerated for murder. So this is something that we just don't really talk about much in society, is what these young people, the violence that these young people see on a regular basis. Can you also share some stories?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem. They don't get a chance to share in a safe environment with a trusted individuals or folks to be able to express what they're feeling. And when you hold things in and don't get a chance to express them or work through them or heal from them, this is what you see in the streets of Philadelphia and Oakland and other places. A lot of times I find young people that we've spoken to oftentimes are fending for themselves. They're in situations where maybe there isn't a mother or dad always available to them or active in their lives. So they're kind of, the street is kind of their family. And so that's where they're most accepted. One of the things I really wanted to bring up though, I wanted to talk a little bit about the influences. And I've heard this, you know, not only just from folks in my league, but also from young people in terms of the messaging that they get, whether it's the video games, whether it's, video games and things like that, or music, you know. I'm sure the young people that you have with us today know all about the drill music. Someone asked me, do you know what drill music is? And I said, no, I really don't. But when I had a chance to kind of look into it, I was appalled at the kind of things and messages that this type of music is sending out to our young people. And I don't think that we are doing the best job that we can in terms of providing messaging and messages that are encouraging, that promote healing and hope for our young people. So if their only frame of reference is the violence that they see in these media and social places, that's what sometimes becomes their frame of reference and what they act out on. So I'm just gonna give you an example. I have a colleague in Newark, New Jersey, his name is Al Tariq, and he's doing something very different to help young people. He works solely with young people, but around music and around art and giving them opportunities to express themselves in positive ways. Some of our young people have such beautiful gifts and skills that oftentimes they aren't given an opportunity in schools or places like that anymore. So he has set up like a recording studio and different kinds of ways that young people can do messaging to each other, but in a positive way. And I think we need to see more of that opportunities. That's giving young people a voice. And a positive voice that they can begin to, I want to say, even encourage other young people to become a part of. You know, but if the only frame of reference they have is that awful drill music or some of the video games that are played, and that becomes their reality, you know. When I saw the five young men jump out of the van that took the life of 14-year-old Nicholas in Philadelphia, five of those young men had guns. Mm. Five of them jumping out of a van, each one of them having all kinds of guns. But this is what they're looking at. This is what they're seeing every day on these video games. And it kind of looked like a video game, but it wasn't. It was real. And as a result, 14-year-old Nicholas lost his life and the other four were injured. Still, most of them are still hospitalized. So we've got to give our young people an opportunity to have a voice, but also be able to send messages out that are encouraging and provide healing and hope.
Dr. Johnson-Spite, you reminded me of a young person who spoke at a Youth Alive event just recently who said, you know, where are the resources for those of us who might not want to go into, you know, sports or music? What about those who of us who want to be doctors? Where are the resources for us? So I just wonder, in Philadelphia, what resources are available for young people who are exposed to violence on a regular basis?
Well, the community in Philadelphia, a lot of the community leaders have been advocating finally for funds for organizations like Mothers in Charge that are on the ground doing the work. And that hasn't always been the case. Only in the last couple of years are we beginning to see resources given to those of us that are on the ground doing this work. And as a result of that, we've been able to come together, some of us, to be able to create places of healing and hope and talk about trauma, talk about what young people are experiencing and give them other alternatives to some of the things that they've been exposed to, showing them other avenues that they can journey on and opportunities and skills and technical skills and things like that. We have a program called I Am Man, and it talks about and have them look at the trauma that they've experienced and how to begin to heal from that trauma and work through some of the issues that they have that maybe 15, 16 year olds you wouldn't think would be dealing with these kinds of issues, but oftentimes, you know, they are.
Janisha, what about Oakland? Just hearing that young man say, we need resources. We need after-school programs. What about those of us who want to be doctors? What resources are available for us? So what resources are available for youth in Oakland who are affected by violence?
Some resources we have, you know, at least when I was growing up, we had programs for youth who wanted to be doctors. I don't know if it's still evident nowadays, but we had those resources where the people who wanted to be doctors, who couldn't get on the football team, who couldn't be a cheerleader and have those outlets, we gave them a space. Nowadays, we do have our program to give them a safe space to talk and just let it out. 'Cause like you said, everybody can't do music. Everybody can't do football. So we're working on creating some more resources, you know, aside from that. But yeah.
And can you also talk about some of the other struggles, Janisha, that youth face that just don't get the attention they deserve beyond the obvious?
As my coworker stated earlier, you know, we are pretty confidential, but you know, there are students who, there are some traumatized students that we have, you know, people's families being shot, whether it's in front of them or them hearing about it on the news. We even have students who could be facing homelessness, you know, just problems in the home in general that nobody knows about because it's in the home. They can't talk to their family about it. And even though we do have programs like TNT, not everybody, you know, wants to come to our program, you know, not everybody wants to talk to somebody. So a lot of the youth have problems that they're dealing with on their own with no adult guidance, you know, just living life.
And then also just easy access to guns, because we know that these arguments or whatever the case, things can escalate so quickly. And without a gun, there could be a fight. People can talk, yell, but there's no shooting. But there's such easy access to guns. Dr. Johnson Spike, can you talk about how easy it is for young people in Philadelphia to get their hands on a gun?
It is very easy, and that is one of the main problems that Philadelphia has. The availability of guns to folks who shouldn't have them. I think, you know, we're not trying to regulate guns or take guns away from people who are responsible gun owners. So I want to make that clear. But there are, you know, ways that young people can get their hands on guns that we need to really, you know, find ways to address that. You know, I've even heard that guns can be rented, you know, at a barbershop. You know, they have the availability now to make guns, you know, on the computer. So all of these things, you know, are available and shouldn't be. And that's why where you see maybe a conflict between two young people, maybe on social media or, you know, individually in person, where it may be a fight or something and then it's over. But because there's so many guns available, the least little thing, and so many of these arguments or disagreements are petty. You know, it's really not a big deal. But because they're angry and out of control, no conflict resolution skills, and that's something we really need to look at for our young people, and the availability of guns, that's what happens. So I really think we need more programs where we're getting young people to understand the consequences as well. I remember a young man telling me he was actually housed in one of our facilities he was charged with the murder. And some of the mothers would go in and tell our stories about the pain and grief we live with every single day when we have to bury a son, a daughter, a loved one. And I remember one of the young men that was there, you know, handing one of the moms a tissue and saying that, had I thought about the pain that I've caused, maybe I wouldn't have done this. You know, so I think a lot of times they don't understand the consequences of their behavior, especially they don't think about the fact that I'm going to go away for the rest of my life. And the only way I leave is in a body bag if I'm being charged with life in prison. And in Pennsylvania, life in prison is life in prison. It doesn't mean 25 years or anything like that. A life sentence means you stay there until you die. Mm. And so I think getting conflict resolution, anger management, and getting them to really understand consequences of their behaviors, of the impact that it has on families when they have to bury a loved one, but maybe even also on some of their family members when they're dealing with the fact that that son or daughter, that 15, 16-year-old will never come home again. So maybe getting those kind of messages to our people from credible messengers. We work a lot, as you mentioned, with folks who were sentenced to life in prison. And because of the Montgomery decision, they were allowed to come home a few years back. So some of our men that work with us now with the juveniles are folks who went, are young men who went, well, they're not so young anymore, but they went away as young men at 15 and 16 because of a bad decision. And not necessarily a bad person, but a bad decision to handle that issue with a gun. And they were sentenced to life in prison, but because of the courts and the unconstitutional piece of juveniles being sentenced at that time to life in prison, they come home. And many of them are credible messages working with our young people, letting them know that these decisions that they're making to pick up a gun can cost them their life, the rest of their life. So we've got to get those kinds of messages out to our young people to get them to understand, you know, and we do a lot of that with the mothers of murdered children and the mothers who have sons and daughters who are doing life sentences.
Well, Dr. Johnson Spite, you're doing such important work. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Dr. Dorothy Johnson Spite is a licensed family therapist and the founder and national executive director of Mothers in Charge. In December 2001, her son Khalik Jabbar Johnson was shot 7 times over a parking space. He died at age 24. She started Mothers in Charge a few years after her son's murder. There are affiliates in a number of cities. And if you have a chance, I hope you can watch a short documentary featuring members and staff. It's called Heaven, Can You Hear Me? We're going to take a quick break, and joining us after the break for the rest of the hour are two guests from the Teens on Target program at Youth Alive, James Fitzpatrick and Janisha Grisham. They were youth leaders in the TNT program while they attended high school, and are both recent hires at Youth Alive, an Oakland-based organization founded in 1991 to break the cycle of violence and uplift a thriving community of leaders. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss two documentaries from the Mill Valley Film Festival. Home is Somewhere Else is an animated feature doc with 3 personal stories about immigrant youth. We'll also discuss Descendant, a documentary following a small community in Alabama who are the descendants of Clotilla, the last known ship carrying enslaved Africans to the United States. We hope you can join us tomorrow. If you have a guest idea or a show idea, we're also putting shows together around the November election. If you have any show ideas around that, we'd love to hear from you. Your call at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about school shootings and ongoing gun violence in this country, if you've been affected by this, if you work on this issue, if you just have any general thoughts or questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall at kalw.org or tweet us. We're at Your Call Radio. Today, we're joined by James Fitzpatrick, a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive in Oakland. Teens on Target is a violence prevention curriculum presented in the form of workshops to middle school students across Oakland neighborhoods most affected by violence. We're also joined by Janisha Grisham, a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive. I also want to play a clip from a young person in Philadelphia. You know, far too many young people say exactly but what Ebony Era says, that I am numb to the pain at this point. So let's hear from this clip from NBC 10 Philadelphia.
I'm numb to the pain at this point because I hear gunshots. Like I say, I hear gunshots every day. So I just don't, it's just like, I feel like it's a normal day in Philly at this point.
This is the reality of high schoolers in Philadelphia. Freshman Ebony Edrey heard the 70 shots fired yesterday. Returning to class today, she said teachers were on edge.
To look at their faces and see them crying, it kind of broke me a little bit.
Same for Judy Tippett. She was at the football scrimmage game yesterday. Lucky she left early.
You never actually expect literal kids like my age and hers to pull up to a scrimmage with a gun.
She tells us she often sees kids on social media bragging about having guns.
All the time. Even when I was in eighth grade, they were talking about how they had the strap at home, and they were about that life. And it was crazy because it's like, we're literally 13 or 14. Why are we worried about having these type of things? Why is this a flex? Why is this something that makes you look quote unquote good?
Thanks to NBC 10 Philadelphia for that report. Janisha, before you comment on just how living with daily violence affects young people, to think that young people are numb at this point, hearing gunshots every day, would you mind telling us a little bit about your story, how you got involved in Youth Alive?
I started off in the program in high school after I lost my brother. So this is something, gun violence is something I have a personal experience with. My mentors there, they kept me in the program all 4 years. It was something I really appreciated, something I felt like I needed. And one day, my mom reached out to me because she's kind of in this work and she's close with some of the people at Youth Alive. And she was like, "You need to apply." And we talked about it, had a conversation about it, And I felt like it was something I needed to do, just to give back to the kids that need it. Like I said, it really helped me when I was in high school. So I felt like, I don't want to say it was my duty, but it was.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that your brother was killed.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
James, what about you? Would you mind telling us about how you got involved with Youth Alive?
Sure. Grew up, born and raised in Oakland. Growing up, you know, you witness and experience a lot of things, even though they don't really hit close to home. For me, it was just things that you heard about. I had anger issues, got into a lot of fights during middle school. But high school is when I actually got into Teens on Target, and I kind of had a life-changing experience with that program, because it just showed me how all of the things that I see, like, my friends doing, or all the things that, you know, even myself got into, all led to, like, some type of violence in some type of way. And just being in this program, Teens on Target, throughout my entire high school career, I mean, sorry, wow, experience, I got to experience a lot of things that kids nowadays not only need, but probably won't have the chance to experience.
Like what? Can you give us a few examples?
Oh, a few. Okay. We partner with a lot of other organizations like Moms Demand Action, and Every Town Gun Sense. We've did a Gun Sense panel in Washington, D.C. So we've spoken on panels before. We've collaborated with Every Town, I believe, in San Diego before. I think they even came out here to Oakland. I know we collaborated with Moms Demand Action and Walking Across the Bridge, you know, for gun violence safety. Just a lot of positive and community impactful and beneficial things that we do that not a lot of kids, they really need. They see so much negative stuff online, and they hear about so many negative things that goes on around them that, you know, they become normalized to it and drawn to it. But for me, for someone who's been inside of this violence prevention program and, you know, a program that benefits not only yourself, but the community, I see things differently from others. So, yeah.
And hearing those young girls in Philadelphia just say that they're numb to the violence, they hear gunshots every day. James, based on your experience and the young people you work with, I mean, what does that do to your mental health over time?
I'll say we hear kids say all the time that gun violence and hearing gunshots every day at night, you know, that stuff becomes, it's normal to them. You know, they hear it every day. They may see it, not every day, but from time to time, you know, so it just becomes so normalized. And when something so triggering and so violent can be normalized, it gives people PTSD. It gives them trauma. And with this PTSD and trauma that they hold inside of them, it influences them and changes their thinking on how to react to things. You know, fight or flight, it would normally be fight because that's all they see. That's what they know could, you know, protect them probably. Mm-hmm. It damages their mental health. Maybe they don't want to go to school. You know, a lot of things that they see on the internet can influence them and not want them to go to school because, you know, you got people making TikToks and going to BET Awards for literally nothing, but, you know, without having to go to school, is my point.
Right. And Janisha, are resources available in schools just like basic counseling for kids who do deal with gun violence and hear gunshots on a regular basis?
I do know that through our program, we do have a set of resources that are available to students that go through that. But specifically in the schools, I don't believe that we have adequate resources because nobody takes it seriously. Like you said, people are normalized. The children, the youth are normalized to the trauma, the gunshots. So, you know, they think it's so normal that they don't even have to go. But to answer your question, I had a student tell me recently, like he wanted to go to counseling, but the wait list for the counselor was so long that he didn't even think he would have an opportunity to speak to them before the school year was over. Oh, so,
wow. So he actually wanted to go, which that alone is incredible, but then not having anyone to talk to. You know, we were curious about how resources are doled out in Oakland, and we found a couple of numbers. So Oakland has voted to approve two new police academies and hire a professional recruiter to attract police officers to the department. According to NPR, this was last December. The city's newly adopted budget directs $336 million to the police department in the 2021-2022 fiscal year, according to the Chronicle. Community programs that support violence prevention, like Youth Alive, only received $655,000, according to the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth. So can you talk about this, James? What kind of advocacy do you all do to ensure that these crucial programs like Youth Alive are funded so there are more resources for kids, so the young person that Janisha was talking about can actually talk to a counselor?
Well, I think it starts with this, people wanting to reach out and wanting to hear our voices. I think it starts there because we can do our jobs all day, every day, as we've been doing for the past years. But there won't be any acknowledgement if nobody wants to acknowledge us, you know, even if we deserve acknowledgement, and we don't even do it for the acknowledgement, but it has to be acknowledged, you know, because if it's not, then it'll go right over everybody's head and they'll continue doing what they've been doing. But if we get a voice and we're able to be heard, and we're able to reach out to people who may never have even heard about our programs or any of these other programs, it can make a huge difference within our community.
That is James Fitzpatrick, a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive, an Oakland-based organization founded in 1991 to break the cycle of violence and uplift a thriving community of leaders. Janisha Grisham is also a violence prevention educator. James and Janisha were youth leaders in the program while they attended high school, and they are both recent hires at Youth Alive. Today, we are talking about gun violence and school shootings. Last Wednesday in Oakland, investigators say at least two shooters fired over 30 rounds in the King Estates campus. The shooters entered the front door and started shooting. They used handguns with extended magazines. They shot six people, two students, a counselor, two school employees, and a security guard. Two victims are in critical condition. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you'd like to talk about gun violence, if you're dealing with this in your community, what are your thoughts? This is just a conversation we just keep having. What needs to change? How do we truly address this? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Kecha, who is a parent of an Oakland student. Hi, Kecha. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call. My son, who is in fourth grade, was not at the King Estates campus last week, but at a school about a mile away. And so when they found out there was an active shooter in the area, they had the kids locked down. And it was completely terrifying and traumatizing. The kids really thought that there was a shooter at their school, and they had to shelter in the classrooms. They turned out all the lights and had to be quiet and still. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking. You know, his sense of safety and security has really been shattered. And several years ago, before the pandemic, the head of the PTA at our school at the time, she was shot and killed one evening. Just an Oakland mom. She was pregnant. She had two sons. So, you know, this touches lives. It reverberates throughout the community. I wish I had solutions to offer. I don't, but it's just heartbreaking. And, you know, we feel it acutely in East Oakland, but then you look at communities across the nation and you see it's in rural communities. It's all over these shootings happen. And there just seems to be no end in sight.
Kate, can I ask you, how do you talk to your child about this?
Well, it's really hard. You know, we want to reassure him, but we also have to be realistic. And so we, you know, try to tell him that he's safe, but it's really challenging. I mean, we know that no one is really safe in the U.S. We took an international trip this summer, and we actually felt safer outside the U.S., just knowing that there isn't the gun problem.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, and I'm so sorry this happened. You bring up a lot of really important points. NBC just did a story really about how more and more people are now buying guns to protect themselves, and the numbers are just increasing. And then to your point about how this doesn't just happen in major cities, I think this is so important, and I'm glad you brought this up, because right-wing media likes to shine a light on Oakland especially, and Philadelphia and Chicago, and frame this as, well, you know how they frame it. It's very ugly. I don't even really want to go there, but you know how they frame it. Rural communities also experience very high rates of gun violence. The Center for American Progress found that from 2016 to 2020, 13 of the 20 U.S. counties with the most gun homicides per capita were in rural areas. So it's not just urban places. It's a number of cities and rural areas across the country. And that's just such an important point. So thank you for mentioning that. It's so important. Thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Amy in Berkeley. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for this very important show that you're doing and to the work that all the folks at Youth Alive do. I also wanted to call and share information about another organization called the Love Life Foundation that was started by Donald Lacey, who lost his daughter, Louisha, in gun violence 25 years ago. It'll be 25 years this November. She was doing violence intervention work and actually working on a play about it at McClyman's High School. She was 16 years old, and she was shot and killed in front of her high school, sitting in a van. The target was somebody else who happened to be in the van, and it was a retaliatory thing. And so her father, Donald Lacey, started this organization. Louisha means love life in Swahili. And so he started an organization to continue the work that she was doing at age 16 to stop youth violence. And they're having a fundraiser. As you talked about, it's very hard to get funds for this. They're having a fundraiser in November. And people can go to their website, lovelifefoundation.org. And also they do a lot of work with youth, particularly around training them for media and the arts, and Donald dedicated his life to this. Some people are familiar with him. Van Jones had a show, Redemption Project, and Donald met with the man who murdered his daughter in front of McClyman's High School, who himself was a teenager, caught up in gang life, and they did a restorative justice work together. So I just wanted to give it. I had tried to see if Donald could call, but he was in the middle of a meeting. So I'm calling on his behalf.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. We'd love to have Donald and some of the young people that he works with on the show. Again, that's the Love Life Foundation, lovelifefoundation.org. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. James and Janisha, we're getting a lot of emails from listeners who just say thank you for the important work you're all doing. And what can we do to support you? Janisha, what can listeners do to support the work you're doing?
One big thing is promotion. Let the children in Oakland, you know, at our school sites or even outside of our school sites, just that we're there, that they have a space to come to talk to somebody, just to let it out. You know, there are people that will help in the community and we are one of them. So I think that's one of the biggest things we need right now.
Janisha, how do you all decide what schools to go to?
We liaison with the school district. There's a lot of paperwork and conversation that we have to go through to be in a school, but we recently have added a school, which is Skyline High School, where we're at now. So it's just a lot of conversation and figuring out what space we can be in at what time. Mm.
James, what would you add? What can listeners do to support your work?
I would just agree with Janisha. Just let the kids know that there are programs other than, you know, sports or music that they can join. Like our program, I know that there's another program called Real Hard, who also do great work in their programs. Like, I think just reaching out to the students and letting them know that there are safe spaces, even though right now school doesn't seem like the safest space, we try to hold a safe space in our wherever we're at. And I hope the kids know that.
Well, let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Greg in Oakland. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You know, this is an issue that's been with us for a while. Unfortunately, you know, people like Sherman Spears and others who helped start Teens on Target and Youth Alive, their work it's almost generational work at this point. And I think that the level of crisis that we see, you know, kind of goes back and forth, you know, kind of alternates between low periods and high periods, but there's this sort of constant. And our kids are being traumatized. Our parents are being traumatized. You know, I've lost a friend. I've lost young people in my life. I've done, as a minister, I've done eulogies for kids like Jaheim King, who was killed in high school. And it kind of goes on and on. And I really, really urge our listeners to push up against the status quo, push up against the notion that we can spend, you know, $18 million on Department of Violence Prevention, which is a good start. But when you compare that to the police budget of $350 million, it's sort of a drop in the bucket. We've been working hard to triple or quadruple that work, those dollars. Back in 2008, we did some work in Richmond, where we established the Richmond Office of Neighborhood Safety. And over a five-year period, we brought the homicide rate down by 70%. That is 70%. And part of why it worked was that we had formerly incarcerated people who knew their neighborhoods in Richmond, who were able to engage on the young people that were the shooters, the young people that were doing the most harm, in a way that actually worked. Ceasefire, violence interrupters, all of that are part of the solution. There is no singular solution to this problem. Policing is part of it. And I mean that in terms of focused policing that holds people accountable for bad acts, not this sort of police culture that we've seen in Oakland over the years. And so as voters, We need to make sure that we elect people who really understand this issue, who don't see it as a singular solution where, you know, we'll say we add more police officers and that's simply all we need to do. I mean, those are the stakes are high in this election. I happen to be running for mayor, but my concern is that, you know, our young people continue to be traumatized, continue to deal with, as your interviewees from Youth Alive have mentioned, you know, they have post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a whole range of anxiety disorders that goes along with this even vicariously witnessing acts of violence. And so it's a generational issue. We have to do something about it. We have to interrupt it. And this election season is one part of the
puzzle, Greg,
in terms of making it.
Thank you so much for calling in. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just want to give the final word to our guest because we're almost out of time. Janisha, final thoughts from you. What else can be done at this point? I mean, it's just to think that you had the 100th homicide victim last night in Oakland, Lewis Truehill, who is the father of a community organizer.
I do want to send my condolences out to that family first and foremost. But right now, we need to listen to our kids. You know, like the caller just said, they're the ones, adults are too, but they're the ones being constantly traumatized, constantly hurt, constantly hearing the gunshots, and nobody's listening to the way they feel about it. I do believe there are multiple solutions, multiple things we need to do, but it really starts there, you know. These children, they don't have anybody to listen to them. Well, they might, but, you know, hypothetically speaking, most children don't have anybody that listens to them, that they may understand what they're going through, but nobody knows really how to talk about it. Too hard for some people. So that's kind of the hill I'm standing on. I know our organization listens to the youth, but like, it can't just be us.
Right. Well, we will continue to really open this space for young people. I think it's so important to hear from young people. Janisha Grisham is a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive, an Oakland-based organization founded in 1991 to break the cycle of violence and uplift a thriving community of leaders. James Fitzpatrick is also a violence prevention educator with Teens on Target at Youth Alive. Janisha and James, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.